You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from someone, quote, across the pond. So I have someone in England who has actually asked to not have her name used on air as she's trying to protect confidentiality of her clients. So I'm going to call her Kay. And Kay in England is working with a 10-year-old, and she is curious about a couple of things. So let me read her email, and then I'll be able to dive in. And she feels a little bit stuck, and we all have clients with whom we feel things get a little bit stuck sometimes. So I think this is going to be really helpful for all of us. So this is what Kay said. I have a young client who's 10, plenty going on in his life, bullying, parental separation, diagnoses of autism spectrum, as well as ADHD, but in sessions, chooses to talk at me, filling the space with goodness gracious, filling the space with incessant chatter about gaming rather than looking to his own emotions. Any, quote, I wonder how you feel about, end quote, is met with, I'm not sure really. We're 30-odd sessions in. I've tried naming the chatter as a way of not talking about the heavier stuff. I've tried following the patterns of his gaming to look for and reflect back at any insights there. I've tried a more Socratic questioning approach. I've tried to stay completely child-led, but I feel like I'm not getting any further. So the question specifically is, what further techniques and approaches would or wouldn't you use to help move this forward? All right. So Kay, thank you so much for your question. And yes, we all have those clients, and they're not always the same type of clients, clearly enough. I mean, you'd think there'd be a pattern where every time I get this kind of kid, I end up feeling stuck. But I don't, in my work, I've never seen a pattern. I feel like sometimes it's just individual kids that for some reason, it doesn't seem like it's moving in the pace and in the order and in the direction that we're kind of used to. And so it kind of makes us go, gosh, what's happening? What do I need to be doing differently, if anything? So Kay, thank you so much for your question, and let's unpack this together. So I think before I get into any specific thoughts, I overarchingly want to make it very clear, and I actually did a pro tip on this. So I might link that in the episode note, because I just talked with my training cohort groups about working with kids on the spectrum and how it changes and how the child-centered approach looks in any kind of child that we work with an ASD diagnosis. So I think that will be linked. However, just to kind of address that right here and now, I really think it's important in a scenario like this to realize that everything you're describing is completely normal for a child that's on the spectrum. And what I mean by that is they do tend to talk at people. That is a common behavior. They tend to be very, very obsessed with video games and altered realities. So that can be games, movies, TV shows. They have a very digital bent, and they get very, very immersed in technological worlds, because that allows them to escape from this world that doesn't often make a whole lot of sense to them. So talking at you is a very common behavior in kids diagnosed with autism. The incessant chatter about gaming, incessant chatter about anything is also very normal, but specifically a bent or focus on video games, also very normal. And the fact that he doesn't tend to look at his own emotions, also very normal. So I think before I even dive into any of the rest of this, it's really, really important and necessary, quite frankly, to recognize that everything that you're describing is standard, and we shouldn't question anything about that scenario, because that's just the nature of a child on the spectrum. So that should normalize right off the bat and help you understand that the fact that this is common, this shouldn't make you question the process. And one of the things that I shared in the pro tip is that the process, the child-centered play therapy process with a child on the spectrum, it takes longer. It's a slower process. So the fact that you're 30 sessions in, that is also expected. And I feel compelled to say, with new data that has come out, a lot of research is showing 30 to 40 sessions is standard and average. So you're not even past the average amount for neurotypical kids yet. 30 to 40 is the average for all issues across all populations, across all age groups for the child-centered model. So you're still in the range of appropriate number of sessions for a neurotypical child. So a neurodivergent child is probably going to take longer. So I think those are just some normalizing statements that I think are helpful for us to keep in mind as we're working with kids on the spectrum. Let's talk about a couple other things. So you specifically mentioned, I wonder how you feel about. Okay, so I hope that this is constructive and helpful, not critical. That is never my intention. So I know you can't see me and you can't read my facial expression. So I want to make sure that just across the board to all of you, anytime I'm answering a question, if my response is constructively critical, it is only to make you better. So I never want you to feel bad or criticized or guilty or ashamed or anything. So just there's my disclaimer. So when you said, I wonder how you feel about, I think we need to pause there because this is something that I see all the time. This is something that I'm constantly calling my therapists out on at the center. And it's something that I'm talking a lot about my participants in the year-long training program with. Because here's what we do. We realize that if we know enough to ask a question, we know enough to make a statement. And we also realize that I wonder statements are ways to gather more information. And both of those are child-centered and both of those are fully aligned with the model. But the I wonder statement is only designed for clinically necessary information gathering. What I mean by that is, if a child puts you in a position where they say you have to be the bad guy, and that's all they say to you, it's clinically necessary for you to stay aligned with the child-centered model to gather more information about what the bad guy is supposed to do next. So it would be clinically necessary and appropriate to say, I wonder what the bad guy does. That would be an appropriate use of an I wonder statement because you can't continue in the therapeutic journey without more information from the child in that scenario. However, what we end up doing as a workaround, because we've been conditioned in elementary school that journalistic reporting and investigative reporting means you ask who, what, when, where, how, why, right? So we're conditioned that we need more information by asking questions. But then to adhere to the model, we say, well, I can just use I wonder statements instead. So, Kay, when you specifically said, I wonder how you feel about, that is information seeking with no clinical justification. Because it does not matter how the child feels about whatever was going to come at the end of that sentence, right? I wonder how you feel about getting bullied. I wonder how you feel about the video game. I wonder how you feel about, what else did you say? Parental separation. I wonder how you feel about your parents separating. All of those are leading, guiding, directive, information seeking, wondering statements. And that is a complete deviation from the child-centered model. Because the child-centered model says the child knows what they need to work on. And if given the time, the tools, the opportunity, and the right therapeutic environment and relationship, they will address what they need to. Now, granted, kids on the spectrum, it's a different process and it's a longer process. But there are plenty of studies that prove that the child-centered model is effective for children on the spectrum. So it's not that it doesn't work. It's not that we have to ask how they feel. If we follow the model and adhere to the principles of CCPT, the child works through the things that they need to work through. It may look different. It may sound different. It might feel different, but they are still getting the benefit of the therapeutic intervention. So my first thought is when you say that you're saying, I wonder how you feel about, and it's met with, I'm not sure. Of course, that's what it's met with, right? Because you're asking him to go up in his head and think about how he feels, but he's living in his heart and in his emotions, and he's emoting in the playroom. Probably about something completely different. He's emoting about his video game. I had a child on the spectrum that played Plants vs. Zombies, I think is what the name of the game is called. He played Plants vs. Zombies at home all the time. He loved it. And he would reenact every single week the Plants vs. Zombies game. And he would lay the rows on my rug. So he would find different objects in the room and lay them on the rug in rows like the plants were going to sprout. And then he and I had to be the zombies. Now, mind you, he never told me that we were playing Plants vs. Zombies. I just deduced this over time. So we played Plants vs. Zombies every single week. And he was emotional and he was expressive and he was engaged and he was involved in the play. But it was only ever about that. And it's easy for me to say, he's not addressing all this deeper work, but we saw progress consistently across the board. So a child doesn't always need to talk about things. A child doesn't always have to understand their emotions verbally. A child doesn't have to discuss this deeper work. That flies in the face of the child-centered approach. So you also mentioned that when you have tried all these other approaches, so you've tried to address the fact that he's avoiding, you've tried to follow the patterns of his gaming, you've tried a Socratic questioning approach, all of those are deviations from the model, right? And we all can get trapped in that. And my gut tells me that you're just feeling pressure, right? Because that's typically when we question what we're doing. That's typically when we deviate, if we do, which we never should. But when we do, it is almost always because we are feeling either self-imposed pressure or pressure from someone else. So the parent, the teacher, the principal, the daycare worker, somebody, there's pressure. This isn't getting better. This isn't working. Why is this taking so long? We're this many sessions in. I don't really think anything is changing. In fact, things are often getting worse. And we end up questioning and we end up feeling pressure. And so my gut tells me when you're trying all these different things, it's in an effort and an attempt to, quote, make things move forward faster, end quote. But the reality is, and we've talked about this many, many times across all of these episodes, if you're new, welcome, please start at episode one and get caught up. Don't start here, you'll have missed so much. What we've talked about so many times is when we deviate, it undermines so many things. It slows progress. It fractures the relationship. The child does not feel unconditionally loved and accepted. The child questions what they can expect in the playroom because this week I'm in charge. The next week you're asking me questions. The next week you're having me talk about my feelings. The next week you're telling me I'm avoiding things. It's going to get in the way of progress. And I don't in any way mean that as something that should make you feel guilty or bad. I'm just reminding all of us, because we all get caught up in this, when we deviate, it hinders progress. So even when everything in your being, and we will all be there, if you're not there and you haven't been there, you will be there, I promise. When everything in your being is saying, maybe I should fill in the blank, remind yourself of this episode, remind yourself of other episodes, remind yourself of the child-centered model, which is we are never agenda-driven and we trust the child, we trust the process, and we trust our skills. And if we don't deviate and we continue the child-centered model without fail, that is when progress and the most positive outcomes are achieved. So we always, always want to catch ourselves when we say, well, maybe I should just whatever. No, we shouldn't, right? The angel and the devil on your shoulder, the devil's going, maybe you should try a Socratic questioning method. And the angel on your shoulder needs to say, no, you are a child-centered play therapist. You will remain true to the child-centered model because if nothing else, Brenna told you to, okay? So that's not why you should stay true. But you know, if that's all you've got with the devil and the angel fighting, then go with that, right? So please be aware, it only undermines and hinders everything we're working toward when we second guess and question ourselves, when we second guess and question our kids, and when we second guess and question the process. So, Kay, I hope that is helpful to you. I hope that that gives you some encouragement. To kind of summarize, we need to understand the process looks different with kids on the spectrum. That's number one. Number two, I think you really will see the benefit of staying true 100% to the CCPT model. Know that deviation is going to be the death of the entire process. And I want to actually close with something that we were just recently talking about in one of my training groups. So one of the participants mentioned Robert Jason Grant, who, if you've not been familiar with him, he presents at conferences and is pretty involved in the play therapy world. He specifically is with Aut Play, and so his bent is autism. And he, in his book, mentions that we have varying definitions of the word play. And he referenced a child in his book who consistently used a vacuum every play session and only the vacuum. So every single week, week after week after week, the child grabbed the vacuum, used the vacuum, used only the vacuum. And his premise in the book is that for that child, it was how he played. And interestingly, that child gained significant therapeutic benefit just using the vacuum every week. And obviously age is a factor. Obviously there are some other considerations. But there's a lot of benefit and a lot of significance in allowing the child to have complete freedom, complete autonomy, to show you what play is for them. And then it's our job to receive that respectfully and with delight and with acceptance. And so, Kay, my closing thought to you is, has there been any evidence of progress? Has mom or dad seen progress? Have teachers seen progress? Is the child doing better in environments? Are some of the presenting problems reducing? Is there a reduction of severity? Is there a reduction of frequency? Are we seeing any indication that the child is making progress? And yes, it might be slow. But just because a child isn't playing in the way that we would typically define play, Robert Jason Grant's premise is that we have to be aware of our definition of play and that sometimes a child plays differently and that's okay. And that their play is valuable to them, even if it doesn't really make sense across standards. So my encouragement to all of us is when we are stuck, when we are struggling with a child, first of all, patience is the order of the day. Second of all, look for progress, because even if the child is making minuscule, small progress, it's still progress. Even if it's slow, painfully slow progress, it's progress. And we're not always looking for mile markers per se in play. We're looking that the child is working toward the outcomes that we want. So, Kay, thank you so much for your question from England across the pond. And for all of us, we need to be encouraged that sometimes we're going to fight within ourselves to stay true to this. And remember, it's never child-centered play therapy plus anything else. Never. Absolute on purpose. It's never child-centered play therapy plus anything else. It's child-centered play therapy because it is evidence-based, because it has been proven effective, and because we have 100 years of research showing us that this works. But it works when we adhere to the model, not when we deviate. So thank you so much for your questions. Brenna@thekidcounselor.com is how you can reach me. If you want even to just say hello, I always welcome just greeting emails too. But if you have a question, I'm happy to add it to the list and cover it when I can. Thanks so much for spending a part of your week with me. I'm grateful for you. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.